Welcome to Disrupt Disruption, a series of intimate interviews with global thought leaders and practitioners operating at the intersection of business, leadership, and technology. We're discussing all things innovation and disruption and how to not only survive, but thrive in these times of exponentially accelerating change. Trusted by CEOs, founders, and leaders globally for the latest take on business models, methods, culture, and leadership, we cut to the chase, debunk the hype, and get real. You're in great company. I'm your host, Pascal Finette, co-founder of Be Radical. Hey, everybody, this is Pascal. We are back with another episode of Disrupt Disruption. Today, we have a repeat guest, Christina Nisheva. She was on one of our very first episodes where we talked about disruption. If you haven't listened to it, definitely do so. We'll put the link into the show notes. Her insights made it into the book Disrupt Disruption, were formative to actually write the book. And I'm really excited to have Christina back. Her job title has slightly changed. She's now the co-founder and the CEO of Officina Bio. And we want to talk today about leadership, which really is the new next era for us to look into when it comes to disruption. Because really, ultimately, innovation and disruption is done by people. And that has a lot to do with leadership. So welcome, Christina. I'm so excited to have you back.
Thank you, Pascal. You're so kind and very privileged to be back. Thank you.
Christina, how do we think about leadership? When you hear the word, what is the first association you actually have?
We get it so wrong. Well, I mean, you know, I've been thinking really a lot for the last few years about leadership. And there was a point when I was like, no, the way the definitions that we have are wrong. Then I started thinking of my definitions. Then I'm like, but that sounds similar to to what the current are. And that got me thinking, so what is it? And I think actually the big problem with leadership is that there is no definition of it that is agreed. And everybody has something in their head, whereas in reality, there is nothing that is agreed. And that causes problem because the versions that we have in our head have been, in a way, formed throughout kind of upbringing. They reflect certain societies, certain norms that were part of certain cultures and so on. Whereas now, particularly when organizations start really trying to get diversity, you start asking yourself the question about, okay, can everybody fit into one model of leadership? And so I started thinking in a few areas. One is there is historically in the Western societies, there has always been kind of a heroic leader, one person at the top and almost no one else, whereas the reality is it never is the case. And we often have appointed leaders. But if you look at the society today, you're actually starting to see quite a lot of people who become leaders. Think of the influencers, right? Mm-hmm. And the organizations yet don't quite reflect that. So that's one of the planes, appointment versus the new models. Then the other thought in my head has been, and we can go in those because I know they're not structured, is actually, as I said, the Western society very often has had one kind of central figure. Whereas if you look in societies outside of the Western culture and some of the prehistoric, different types of leaders are appointed for different needs or are selected for different needs. So that made me thinking about, okay, from an organizational point of view, is the person who is put as the head, as the CEO, as whatever, are they always the leader and what's their role? Or do you almost need to have different types of leaders? And I read an article, which I'll share with you. I think it was a chain from MIT or Harvard. Gosh, I'll check it, Pascal. Anyway, so, and he talks about the movie set where you have the director, but you have the lead actors, the stars, you have the people who film and so on. And each and everyone, screenwriters, actually takes a lead and yet you get it together. And I think that starts to be was probably the best example of what I think leadership needs to become, a different people taking the baton in certain stages and moving forward. Of course, that leads to the question how the organization functions, but that's probably management.
So interesting what you said. I think we can see and feel and can point out bad leadership when we see it. And I think most of us can also point out good leadership when they experience it. But I think very few of us can actually put a finger on what does it actually mean? What's the formula, if there is one? I'm so curious, you said something which made my ears prick up. You talked about influencers as a model of leaders, which makes me question if our organizational structures even support that. And if so, how do we build organizational structures which can support more of an influencer-driven leadership, if that's something which is desirable?
If it's desirable, I mean, I gave it as an example because these people are leaders, right? Mm-hmm. They put themselves out there, whether we like everyone or not, but they get people to follow them, literally follow them,
absolutely,
right? And they yield certain power for certain interest. The organizational structures are something that they absolutely need to change, in my mind, because if you look, I think org structures reflect the technology of the day. And the current org structures come from Taylor from the beginning of last century, if I remember correctly the time. So, and that was the great right innovation at the time, where kind of the mechanics, engineering, the technology of the day was literally being adopted, and he made fantastic progress with the steel mills and so on. But if you think about the technology of today, it's much more distributed, it's networks, which then determines the way the communication flows, right? Mm-hmm. So if the hierarchy made sense because of the way communication flows, hierarchy doesn't make sense in an organization where the communications flows are very different and the sensing of what's happening is at very different, I mean, is at different parts of the organization and travels in a different way. So we definitely need to have a different structures. The question, of course, is what are they and how you get to those structures. I mean, there are organizations that are using kind of micro enterprises, which give more almost each unit, and they can choose their HR, their legal, and so on, inside, outside of the ecosystem. This gives much more autonomy to people, right? I'm a big believer that new forms of structure need to emerge that allow those who want to create something new. And ultimately, leadership is actually about creating something new and better to emerge. And then, of course, depending on the stage of the organization, some form of this might be simple, probably management. How do you maintain something to function? And both are equally important.
I'm curious, you're a CEO of a startup company. How do you think about setting up your own organizational structure and your own leadership and the leadership you instill in others?
I'm very much thinking about how can we create this type of more fluid organization. And it, of course, depends on what the company is doing. But one of the things we are thinking about is there a way in which actually there are certain functions that could be part of a manager, but could they be done by a different person who simply that's their job, more like project manager type of work, whereas let's say certain others like people development are part of somebody else. There are models in which we're looking, again, depending on how the organization evolves and the science evolves, because they depend, but there are models where you could play with, if you want to create different products, should every product be owned by the company or could it be partially owned by the company, right? Mm-hmm. And then you start to have a bit more kind of network type of organization.
So you've been part of large organizations, now you're part of a startup. I have experienced in my career very often the breakdown of organizational structures and the very dramatic shift of organizational structures when you get to Dunbar's number. So this idea that you can, in a social context, you can keep about 150 or so relationships in your head. And once you get beyond that, really something fundamentally shifts. How do you think about leadership and organizational structure in these two contexts, if you have seen those?
I've been part of big organizations. And actually, what I've seen in big organizations is that you have the group CEO of the whole company, mm-hmm. and that creates a certain vibe, and much more than a vibe, but they are felt. But at the end, usually these people are far removed. So particularly if you're not in the headquarters, it's actually your general manager. It's your probably the regional head. And these people, I think the best examples of leadership of people like this that I've seen are when they have been able to show, really to understand the specifics, understand the corporate strategy, and you can see them pushing back, or I mean, not just being a yes man of the top and being able to adapt that thing that comes, the global strategy for the local environment. For me, it comes back to the structure, right? If the something works, if you are the leader and you create the context and criteria of what needs to happen, what you expect, and you manage as per outcomes, but you don't say much about what needs to be done. You leave it to the local team to decide within the certain parameters. But then you're able to have the tough conversations and manage performance if that doesn't happen. I think you could get probably the best of both worlds, because I've seen companies go from very decent kind of autonomous structures, still mm-hmm. reporting, but autonomous, to very centralized. And I think that balance in between is difficult to maintain. And it is because, in my mind, the performance criteria are not clear. Yes, we have the budgets and things like this. But very often, you can, with good storytelling, mm-hmm. you can get your way out.
When you look at a leader in this context, what do you think are the qualities you need to bring as a leader? Like skills, abilities? How do you really show up as a good leader these days?
I've been kind of thinking a lot about this. And for me, the key thing is that I almost used to say that no one should be leading other people unless they have done some really deep inner work. So the first thing for me is, do you lead from your ego, or do you lead from a place of self-acceptance? And obviously, we all have egos and we can't function without egos. The question is the awareness and how comfortable one is with themselves, regardless of the situation or what is happening. And so that's probably the key thing for me. Really, what's the starting point? Do you know yourself enough to know how you react when you're provoked? I mean, I've had situations where in a fairly kind of tense and hostile situation, I reacted to someone saying something and I really kind of reacted. I was like, no, da, 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 da. And then I felt very bad about that. And I was reflecting, why was I that provoked? And I realized I was provoked because I was feeling constantly on the back foot, like I'm fighting. And so I'm like, okay, but why? What is it? What do I believe about what this, my team believes about me? And this actually really helped me to realize that people are trying to do their best and they are often stressed for the exact same reason I've been stressed, right? What would she think about me? And in most cases, they're really doing their best. So it's my job. I have to accept that that's the starting point. If they're malicious, I need to understand and deal with it. If they're not capable of performing at the standard, it's my part of my role to make sure I get them or I move them to a place where it works for everyone, because no one feels good if they can't deliver, or most of the people won't feel good if they can't deliver. But if I wasn't thinking about it, I was like, how can they do that? That's not acceptable behavior, la 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 la. So where you lead from, which then leads to me something that's super important, which is humility. And everybody, or a lot of people, talk about it, but our cultures are very much form driven. So first, how you come across, how you speak, and so on, and much so substance driven. And humility, it's difficult to be seen immediately and recognized as a leadership quality, but it's super important, because if you operate from the I know it all or I know it best, then it's really not in our world. It's more about, oh, how can I make sure that the best information is put to the table and the best decision for the situation is made, and for this you need to be humble. So these are probably the key things that I really appreciate in a leader, because then they create other conditions for the person to be much more inclusive and to listen.
You said something where I love this image that you evoked, that notion between form-driven versus substance-driven. Curious to hear your thoughts. I remember, I don't know, maybe 7 years ago or so, when I was at Singularity University, the infamous Valve handbook came out. So Valve being a game developer, you might have seen this. So the whole idea behind Valve's organizational structure was pure meritocracy. And the idea was the person who can rally the resources is the person who gets the resources. So if you're a game developer, you've got a great idea, you rally a team around it. The idea was that if you can convince others to follow you, then there is momentum, and thus when there is momentum, then we fund the project, etc. Valve released this as a PDF handbook. It became super famous. I remember very many of my colleagues running around like, this is the future of leadership. And of course, as all of these systems turn into a variant of the Lord of the Flies, if I remember that book correctly. So it's basically a shit show. So pardon my language, but it's a shit show of the most egocentric, form-driven, most loudly and often energetic and enigmatic leaders get the resources, not actually the best person to lead a project or the best project. So it kind of like collapsed on itself. Curious, how do you think about this in the context of leadership? Like, how do you avoid that trap? How do you avoid a replay of the Lord of the Flies, which we seem to have every single time?
That's a pain point, Pascal, for me. Because I've always had this kind of conflict in my head, but of course you have to deliver, and that's thing that matter. And then you realize painfully that actually doesn't matter in a lot of organizations, or doesn't matter that much, exactly because the first reaction to which you respond is the form, the enthusiasm, the excitement that someone can create. And you can see this in VC world very, very well. So it's another thing. So for me, what I've seen from really the best leaders are then to be able to discern this. So now if you're in entire meritocracy, so I give the idea and then there is no veto of how. So if you take the influencer model to the extreme, which seems like that was the model, the trouble obviously becomes that that's not enough. You need, that's the movie set. That's not the movie set. That's the director having, I have a great idea, but then being unable to create the best thing. So how do we avoid this? For me, it comes down to realizing and respecting the different roles in the team. Yes, you are creating the most excitement, so people want to do it, but before you get the resources, how are you going to execute? If it needs to be a meritocracy, if we take this, if then you need to present your whole plan to the people, people will start asking questions and you start to have this mechanism. So I haven't thought how you deal this in the context of who kind of really to the end without any oversight from board of directors or something like this. But if I have to implement that model, I would then definitely say, okay, you get the resources. That's a three or four ideas that everybody want to pursue. Let's now everybody look at how we're going to implement those ideas. Where is the risks? Who are the best people? And also, is the person whose idea, are they the best to lead? What's their role on the team? Or do we need somebody else that actually or lead or manage in this case to ensure the execution? So it's just being aware of where the pitfalls are and not running just with the idea without thinking.
How do you think about diversity in this context? One of the challenges I find, at least, is we all seem to agree finally that diversity matters. We all encourage diversity. We get trained in diversity and inclusion, etc. And yet I find still in companies that very often diversity is more of a, it's more of a concept and more of maybe more of a lip service rather than an actual experience. And I think it comes down to leadership and organizational structures. From your experience, how do you foster a truly diverse environment, high-performing environment?
So for me, one of the key things that I've started to try and differentiate is between what I expect the leader to achieve and the how. Mm-hmm. The way I look at it, you have what needs to be achieved, right? Mm-hmm. And I, for example, the leader needs to ensure that the team delivers and the goals are achieved or the appropriate objectives are agreed with the team. But then it's a matter of style or embodiment of that leadership. So I wouldn't expect everyone to be at the beginning shouting and rallying the troops in kind of very what Steve Ballmer way, if I can, because yeah, that's the image that comes in my mind. Because A, they might not be the person, B, that might not be appropriate for the culture and for the environment. Like when I was in Latvia, I mean, such type of leadership was really not well accepted. Like people would react because it's a different, very different culture. They needed a moment in time, a different way of motivation and inspiration. So the form or the style, the embodiment of how you get people inspired to do, how you deal with performance is something where diversity matters, right? Because I do care how someone gets there. I mean, I care about it being ethical, inclusive, and so on. But in a way, whether it is the person's very quiet, but able to touch the soul of, or the person is really injecting energy into everybody and that's where it comes. So that's the diversity is really important. I don't have the right answer. That's my kind of way of approaching. And the other thing is being very open. Mm. Because one of the key things for me in leading others is about how you're able to to lead a difficult conversation. Whether you go there and yes, you deliver the news and that's it, or you go there, you have a point of view which you expect the other person may not like, may not be, but you're able to listen to them and perhaps even change some of your perspective. And it's the same with, I think, with diversity. If we're aware that we have a kind of a prejudice or a concept of how leaders behave, how people, top performers behave, but we are open that that might have a different embodiment, then it starts to be probably a little bit more inclusive.
In your experience as a leader and also as being someone who has followed a leader, are there any tools, any practices you found really worked really, really well and you kind of made your own, as in like, this is something I do?
I've spoken with many people and for me, one of the key things has been empathy. Hmm. In a way, how do I treat others? I mean, to have empathy in a situation, it has been really about being comfortable with who I am and being able to lead from a place where I can say and believe in what I say. And that's something which I found it really difficult in certain settings because there is certain expectation, as I said, of how a leader should behave. And if I don't feel comfortable, I can't play that role. So that's more public type of things. The empathy has been very important in diffusing emotions and also understanding why others would behave. I had a situation where someone was, let's say, wasn't giving me the correct information. And I've confirmed, yeah, something has been done. Certain things have been communicated and they weren't. So when I realized that they weren't, I was furious. And I was very indignant, like, why would they not tell me? I mean, honestly, there was nothing so scary of not telling me. And then a friend of mine and a coach, she said, okay, put yourself in the shoes of that person who gave you this information, and I want you in first name to say how they felt and why they did that. And I'm like, well, they, no, Christina, you say I. Honestly, Pascal, it's just like the moment I said, I kind of thought I, the
so
penny dropped. And that was something that then I had used in a situation with my team where they didn't want to do something, and my boss at the time was supposed to come. Why would he come? And someone said, well, let's face it, he doesn't like them, we don't like him. And I used that and I said, so how do you think he feels when he needs to come and see us? Oh, well, maybe he, no, I. First person, second person, and then they said, okay, we get it. And then that changed the conversation. So this thing about empathy allows you to make a decision and move without the emotion, because we all react, right? And then the third one that I've recently come across is really to think about what I need to learn and what I need to unlearn. So in his book, Range, David Epstein talks about that. And which from our, so what is the problem we're facing? What's the situation? How can you go back down to first principles? And then not say, oh, my experience is this. Actually, my experience was great, but it's totally irrelevant, or maybe it's even the wrong thing. And that's another tool that's been super, super useful, which again keeps you on the humble side, right? To know what from your experience is relevant and what you need to discard.
This is an absolutely fascinating conversation. I love how we're talking about organizational structures and more organic, like the influencer inspired structures. Love how we're talking about empathy and humbleness. One thing you hear very consistently, and I think it makes intuitive sense, is so looking at goal alignment, when you look at topics like high performing leadership, which seems to be a thing now, they actually have an acronym, HPL, which is kind of weird. Number one topic in high performing leadership is very often like the starting point is a goal, clear goal alignment. Everybody knows the goal, everybody has embodied it, everybody moves into the same direction. And it makes intuitive sense. Otherwise, you know, like if we don't know where to go, like we will go into all kinds of different directions. Throughout your long career, I'm curious, have you seen approaches which make that work better than just the leader sitting there and it's like, here's the goals. Everybody read them. Everybody sign with your blood that we agree on those goals. Curious, maybe as a last question, if you have any insights from your perspective, how do you achieve that?
Yeah, and actually this leads me to one of the thoughts I've or frustrations I have as I see in organizations. It comes down to me to the question, whose team, which team is your team? So what I mean by that, imagine you have the leadership team of a let's say fairly not so big organization, but they have their own team. So it's at least two-tier structure in the current setting. So the thing is, is the leadership, when you sit on a leadership team, who is your team? Is that the leadership team or is that your own team that you're leading? And that's a concept which I read many years ago from Patrick Lencioni, Five Dysfunctions of a Team, which is a brilliant, brilliant book. And for me, that's one of the core things around the alignment, getting alignment. So have the trust so that you can have conflict, and he uses the word conflict, but then you have a commitment because the decision is being made, you've debated it, and there is no kind of, yeah, they decided. And then you can have accountability, which leads to results. And then to the point of the alignment, the element is first how you come to the goals. And if you're the leader, you should have some form of a direction of travel, but you should also, in my mind, really get people together and crystallize so that it's not one person says, so obviously they'll have an idea to get there. And then for me, it's really about, is this a team? Maybe I'm oversimplifying, but if you have a team that's working, if that team sees themselves as they won't be successful unless the organization is successful, then the alignment is much easier to achieve. The shifting of resources is much easier to achieve, and the changing of the priorities.
Christina, this has been an absolutely fascinating conversation. On your last point about alignment and really starting with a team, I want to end this conversation. We can speak for hours about this. I really, really enjoyed your insights. Again, for me, key takeaways, which really make me think, is your notion around influencers and like this idea of like, what can we actually learn from how we organize our private lives these days and whom we follow in our private lives as to how do we bring this into our organizational structures. And then definitely, I love your point about empathy and the seeing the other person out of the I perspective, even in the language I'm using, is really powerful, because it's very easy to talk about empathy. I think it's a very different thing to actually have empathy or like express empathy, in particular in a heated situation. So with that being said, Christina, thank you so much. This was incredible.
Thank you, Pascal.
Hey, it's Pascal. Thanks for tuning in on this episode of Disrupt Disruption. If you want more, check out the other episodes we have on this podcast. And if you liked it, do us a favor. Go on your podcasting platform of choice, iTunes, Google Play, whatever it is, and leave a quick review. It helps tremendously with getting the insights from our guests out into the world. If you have any questions, send me an email. You can reach me at pascal@finet.com. Thank you so much for listening, and I will hear you here soon.